Welcome to Between Two Chairs, Demystifying Commercial Real Estate, the podcast that brings you the latest insights and trends on the South Florida commercial real estate market with your hosts, Fernando Arencibia Jr. and Jennifer Wollman. In each episode, we dive into the world of commercial real estate and break down complex concepts to make them accessible for everyone. Whether you're a real estate professional, a curious investor, or just interested in the South Florida market in general, Between Two Chairs is the podcast for you. So pull up a chair and join us.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Between Two Chairs. My name is Fernando Arencibia, and with me, as always, is the always punctual and early Jennifer Wollman. Jennifer, say hello.
Hello, everybody. Yes, I'm always early, because if you're not early,
you're late. Well, Jay, I know we have a very special guest, and would you do the honors to introduce?
We do. It is my pleasure today to introduce Jamie Levinson. She is a commercial insurance specialist with the Insurance Office of America company, also known as IOA. And I don't know, we've now known each other for a couple of years and see each other at several events. She is a person that we refer often to our commercial clients, because if you're from Florida, especially South Florida, you know that insurance in general is a huge issue and something always at the top of our mind, and something that all of our clients have to take into account when they're underwriting a property. So welcome, Jamie. We're so excited to have you.
Yay! I'm popular for all the wrong reasons.
Not at all. You're also a native Miamian, correct? And your family has deep ties to the area. So give us some background.
I will. So first of all, thank you so much for having me. This is so fun. I don't feel, though, that I'm between the two chairs. So I want to like clip myself and like superimpose myself in between the two chairs. I probably will do something, you know, when we're promoting it, to do something funny like that. But I grew up in Miami. My family, most of them, is from the Midwest, came to Miami pretty early on. And I grew up in the shopping center business. So my family, we had about, you know, 2-3 million square feet of shopping centers. So I grew up much like Beth's kids, you know, where my dad, like on the weekends, we were doing like property tours and like picking up trash. And I just didn't know if we were in the janitorial business. I didn't really get it. I remember going to ICSC as a kid and just, you know, running around. And So it's what I know. My dad has three daughters and wanted all of us to create our own legacies and our own place in the world. So he sure did sell the portfolio, retire early, and say, kids, you're on your own. I actually first started my career, I worked for Colonial Bank, believe it or not, as an executive assistant to the new branch development department. So I was building branches in 5 different states, and that was a really cool experience, because now fast forward all these years later, one of my clients just closed on the Truist portfolio of vacant branches, some of which I built under Colonial.
Oh, wow.
So it's really full circle. But what was interesting about that experience, and why I say it really helped shape who I am today, is the bank went under. You know, it was taken over by the FDIC. I was 21 years old. I didn't have a college degree. I had nothing to fall back on. You know, my dad was like, good luck. And it was 2007, 2008. It was a really difficult time. So I ventured off into residential property management. I worked for, at the time it was Continental, now it's First Service Residential, and got a lot of experience with just managing high-rise condos. And then, believe it or not, I lived in a building, which then I also managed, which was Latitude on the River in downtown. And I had 452 units residential and 220 commercial. And construction defects, Chinese drywall, like faulty sprinkler heads. I had rubber boots next to my bed. So I was truly on the other side of insurance from the standpoint of I was filing the claims and really understanding the complexities of insurance as someone who had massive claims and big payouts. If it wasn't for insurance, there would have been a lot of issues, you know, with people's homes and so forth. So I always liked insurance. Then it came to how to purchase insurance. And I was always very confused because I had so many brokers and agents coming in telling a different story. Oh, I've got this cool program, or I have this exclusive product. And so when you start peeling back the insurance industry, that's all fake news. It's not real, you know, and it's sales tactics that are just, they should be used at a car dealership and really not when you're talking about catastrophic coverage and you have people's legacies, you have people's dreams, you know, like you are holding, you know, the key to that should something, you know, terrible happen. So gravitated towards insurance in 2013. And actually my father's insurance broker for 25 years, I went to go work for him because I'm like, if my dad's been your client for this many years, then obviously you're doing something right because that guy's tough. So I learned from, you know, who I think is the best. And I got into the business never bidding on insurance. So I've never bid on insurance before, ever, in almost 14 years. So you hire me like you would hire an attorney. And I just fell into that type of practice. I didn't, you know, it was just a very, very different type of more of like a holistic way of purchasing it. And through that, I just have been able to understand really like the underwriting of the assets and really trying to empower owners, underwrite your own asset. Like you underwrite deals all the time. You can underwrite your insurance deal. Like you actually don't even need me. The carriers need me because of volume, which sometimes I think to myself, like, what if we could create something where clients could go direct? But then I would be out of a job.
So you've had, you know, experience with property management on both sides. How does commercial insurance differ from residential? Because somebody who's maybe never owned a commercial asset before, if they're getting into it, might only have experience with Citizens or their resi.
So, interesting question. They are so different. So on the condo side, condos are considered commercial, same with, you know, multifamily. So they all are going to be subject to like similar carriers, similar appetites and so forth. So homeowners is such a different bucket. I don't really do homeowners. And some of my clients are like, listen, yeah, you have to find someone that can explain to me what's going on. I think that at some point it's really negotiating on the homeowner piece with how just volatile the market has gotten. You might have friends, and no judgment, they were all getting new roofs from insurance. You know, oh, insurance is buying me a new roof. I'm getting a new roof. And I think that there was just not enough bumpers, like in a bowling alley, and not enough restrictions from carriers. And I think that adjusters maybe didn't have like the best roadmap of how to help navigate that, but too much got paid out in residential. There was just people that were collecting. At some point, it's like, is it covered by insurance? Yes, but would the event have happened if you were properly maintaining and properly replacing your roof? So I think now the whole thing with residential of, I can't get insurance unless I have a new roof. It's like, well, yeah, you should have never been insurable if your roof is 15 years old. So I think it's just like changing the mindset of this is catastrophic coverage. And then also helping educate the banks. I think the banks are now starting to really, you know, pick up. But in some cases, I have a client of mine who I said, how much is it for the force placed insurance from the bank? Because maybe that's cheaper than the actual policy itself. I do not write with Citizens. I'm very proud to say that I have never written a Citizens policy. That's just because I think that, especially in the commercial shopping center space, the fact that like we don't have certain very important coverages included in the Citizens policy, and then also Citizens does have the ability to special assess 40%. And I think that we would have a lot of tenants that would be very angry with us if all of a sudden our CAM was that off.
So you can get commercial insurance through Citizens, but you don't recommend it for those reasons, for those shortfalls.
Yeah, and the market's improving. You know, the market's improving. We're seeing, I think it's education of when you look in the shopping center space, the whole point of insurance is you would think it's a great risk. We have tenants, we're not responsible for their interiors, we're pushing risk downstream to them. We really have our parking lot and our common area, which as long as we are maintaining that, which we should be taking care of our parking lots and we should be making sure we're paving correctly and that signage and ADA, you know, compliance. So really, shopping centers should be a great risk. I think where we've fallen into the issue of now no one wants it is truly because it's our job as the landlords and property managers to make sure that our tenants are compliant with their leases. And gathering a COI, which is like your certificate of insurance, that's not enough. You don't really know what you're looking at. So I have a lot of clients who are like, yeah, we have someone in our office that collects the COIs. And I'm like, well, has that person been trained? Do they know what to look for? And that's like the risk transfer piece that is what I'm trying to educate my clients with right now is how do we train everyone to understand what a COI is, the power that it has, should we need it? So that way the landlord doesn't keep getting on the hook for all these claims.
And what are some of the things that landlords should be looking for in a COI?
Okay, I'm not going to get too nerdy.
Right. It's okay. We like nerdy.
Okay. So we have to, insurance, even though it seems like it is very complex, if you look at an insurance policy, it's 300 pages. Okay. 200 pages, 300 pages. The reason why it's so long is because it actually has examples in there. It's like a textbook. I mean, it's like an elementary school textbook. It's just no one reads it. So they even have specific examples in the policy of like, if this should happen, then you can, this could trigger this, the payout will be this, but we also have these exclusions. So no one wants to read their policies. If you read your policies, have people in your office read them, just tell them, read the policies and highlight what you think is something that I should know about. But no one wants to read them. And then we have another big issue where your agents are not delivering your insurance policies timely. That's, I think, a big thing. I have some clients that will come to me and be like, oh, I haven't even gotten my policies. I'm like, how do you not have your insurance policies? So what we like to do is when policies come in, let's say 30, 60 days after renewal, we'll send them to you right away. But we'll have a disclaimer saying these policies haven't been checked for accuracy. Right? Because there are sometimes discrepancies. We use AI to do the policy checking. And then we have someone from our team review what the AI has supplied to us. And a lot of the time, there are mistakes with policies. A square footage was off, a named insured is missing. So we obviously have to check for that and make sure that it's accurate. But when your policies come in, I tell landlords all the time, tell your agent, hey, please send me my policy when it comes in at the 30-day mark or 60-day mark when it comes in. If it hasn't been checked yet by your organization, that's okay. Put a disclaimer in the email. I just want my policy. So I would say definitely that, read your policy. And then secondly, just if you take a second and think of all of the risks, and I think property managers are the best at understanding this. If you have a vendor that comes onto your property, let's say it's a plumber, how are they getting onto the property? Are they flying? No, they're driving. So if they're driving, what if they hit a pedestrian? What if they hit a shopper? What if they hit our building? So what should we make sure they have? Commercial auto, you know? And then we should make sure, you know, well, what are they doing? They're a plumber doing what? You know, and is it high risk? Is it low risk? And if it's something like an electrician that could potentially get electrocuted and die. I hate to say that, but
your risk management.
Yeah, I mean, it does happen, unfortunately. Then if there is a death, we should really make sure that that electrician has proper umbrella limits, meaning that if there's a death, you have to think we're going to somehow blow through that first million. We should really make sure that we have excess umbrella coverage on top of that. And then work comp. You know, if you're the owner and you're work comp exempt, great. Let me see your exemption. And then if you have another employee that is not an owner of the company, they're not work comp exempt. So we need to then be able to tell our owners, you know, or that vendor, hey, if you're the only one on site and you're work comp exempt, great. But if you have anyone else come onto the property, we need to make sure that we have work comp on that certificate. So it's things like that, that once it sticks, it's not going to unstick. We just have to start slowing down and thinking about every vendor, making sure we're vetting those vendors appropriately, understanding that simple things. And Beth and I just went through this exercise. Beth Azor, of course, the queen.
It's okay. We drop her name all the time on our podcast.
Absolutely.
She's such a queen. You know, Beth doesn't want to truly understand insurance, but what's crazy is like now she's starting to understand it, you know, because it's just so black and white. So there's not a ton of, you know, gray area. So we were working on a deal, and the GC that we were talking to, they get their work comp through a PEO, which is like an ADP or your payroll provider, which is totally fine. However, should they hire a subcontractor that doesn't have work comp or has an issue with their work comp policy, the PEO will not cover the subcontractor, which means that the owner of the shopping center is going to have exposure. So once I explained that, it was like, okay, we don't work with GCs anymore that have PEO work comp. Well, why don't GCs have work comp? You know, not all of them, a lot of them do. But why are they going to the PEO provider? And then when I've spoken to some GCs, they're like, oh, it's cheaper and it's easier to get it through ADP. And it's like, well, did you even know that you have this exposure, which then you're putting on to your owners? And when you have that conversation, it's like that could ruin your reputation. So a lot of these GCs are like, oh, no, let me get rid of this. And, so it's truly starting to like come together, I feel, but we need to like spread the message out wider because I do speak a lot, as you can tell. We're 17 minutes in and I've taken up a lot of time here,
Well, that's perfect. They want to hear you. They don't want to hear us. They hear us all the time.
But those are the types of things that we want to look at is what, yes. And then we're leasing property, right? So I speak to my owners all the time and I'm like, do you have professional liability? What do I need that for? I'm like, well, you're leasing property. Well, what's that going to do? Well, what if one of your leasing agents, there's an error, you know, and they said something and then it wasn't delivered and there was an LOI that was signed. Like we're transacting and we make mistakes. Like we should be able to cover. I had a large claim due to a business saying that the space wasn't leased to them because of, you know, it was a discrimination case. And that was something that thankfully we had the proper coverage. So we were able, you know, to get defense from that. But things like that happen. And it's like, why not be prepared for that? Especially when you're someone who's syndicating deals and you have all these investors and, you know, distributions, like why would you want to be on the hook for something like that? You know, oh, in 20 years, I've never experienced something like that. And I'm like, well, let me just tell you that when you look at the model, it's every...
You're about due.
Yeah, you're about due. Your time is actually coming. So it's nice, you know, but that's where I think data and research is really, you know, helpful.
So I think it's super interesting because just listening to you, like I get my insurance and I never, like I look at the policy, I'm like, it's pretty standard. If I don't sign it, I don't get insured, whatever. But now I'm like, oh my gosh, like I should be talking to Jamie every time right. I hire somebody, every time I want to do an expansion, every time I want to do a build out, I'm in lease negotiations. The potential tenant has been to my property 6 or 7 times. times they're bringing their roofers, their AC guy, their architects. Like all of a sudden, I'm like, my heart's palpitating for all those events. But so I just want to point out that you really do need to get your insurance agent involved in just about everything that you do and make sure that somebody understands the comprehensiveness of what your policy does and doesn't cover and where you might think you're covered. To your point with this GC, you might think you're covered and all of a sudden you're exposed on a pretty big side.
Well, first, I want to say you're a brave soul. You've kept all your hair. You didn't pull it all out between commercial insurance and property management. So you're built for this. It's obvious. But I wanted to ask you about what...
I have to be tough.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to ask you about the what Floridians, and I think, you know, in other parts of the country as well, but what we have experienced over the last 3 years, this incredible insurance crisis that has to do with skyrocketing costs, but also unavailability, all right, of insurance vehicles. That has also been an issue. And we've dealt with this. It's almost been like a perfect storm because, you know, we have been subjected to, obviously, all of the catastrophic events that are not only in our state, but around the country and around the world, and how those things affect each other. Inflationary pressure that we've gone through, you know, that really we haven't experienced in decades. And then we had, you know, after the Surfside collapse, you have all these changes to the 40-year, 30-year, you know, recertification of buildings. I know that a couple of years ago, the state of Florida made a big push to have tort reform, really, which was unprecedented and a very difficult thing to achieve, and people were clamoring for it for years. We're starting to see this depopulation of citizens, and I know a lot of these things are more to the effect of residential insurance premiums. Have you seen, is there a correlation or any sort of positive effect as a result of those changes that have positively affected the commercial insurance market?
So, look, media, I think, is playing a huge part in this. I think that there's a lot of great agents out there. I wish I could shake all of them. I wish I could shake all of them, give them a hug and say, you don't have to bid anymore. You don't have to just undercut premiums and try to find the cheapest option without disclosing crazy exclusions. Like you are good enough to be like an attorney, you know, or like an accountant. And clients, especially in the shopping center space, in the multifamily space, they deserve to know what risks they're taking on. And I would say that what we saw from, first of all, Hurricane Ian, everyone is just like, Ian did this. Ian didn't do this. Okay. So the way that insurance is modeled, okay, is, and then every carrier has their own modeling, but there's the AIR and the RMS model. And those models have every recorded event, you know, it's historical data. You put your property in there with all the underwriting information. That, what I just said, underwriting information is the most important thing. And that is what I believe is the cause of this entire mess. You have agents that are putting together what's called a schedule of values. That schedule of values has all the information on the property, the type of roof system, the age, the year built, the updates to electrical, the updates to, you know, the roof, whether it's sprinklered or not, the exact square footage, is it joint masonry construction, is it frame construction, is it non-combustible, fire resistive? So we have seen, unfortunately, faulty underwriting. If it's fire-resistive construction, obviously you're going to get a cheaper rate, right? If it's joint masonry or frame, we're seeing fire exposure, and then we're also, you know, to hurricanes. It's just a different, you know, type of risk. So I think that's like step one, making sure that there's accurate information. Most owners that I talk to, I'm like, have you ever seen your schedule of values? And they're like, what is that? Well, the reason why most agents don't give you your schedule of values is truly because they don't want you handing that to the competition. Because if I have your schedule of values, I can take that and go get a quote and run with it. The point is that that's like your Bible. It's the Torah. You know, you have to have the information of how your property is being underwritten. Then all of a sudden a claim happens, right? Well, if it was underwritten incorrectly, what's going to happen? You get a denial. But the carrier still had an expense to get to that denial. And I think that that's what the important message is. To get to a denial of a claim, you still had to hire an adjuster. You still had to do inspections. You still had to defend, right? So the carrier spending, I mean, to deny a claim, a carrier could be spending 30 grand. So now multiply that.
So I have a question regarding the schedule of value. Do they by law have to give that to you, or is that something that's kind of up to the carrier?
I don't think it's by law, but like you, I don't know if there's a law, but like,
so you have, yes, a right to it.
You are 100%. You have a right to it. 100%. You have a right to it. And by the way, most people, you like when you're signing, because every time, you know, you have insurance, it's like signing, you know, you feel like you're at a dealership. It's like signing 500 pages. Your schedule of values is in there and you're signing it. So you're signing things that then the carrier is saying like, oh, well, you signed it. And then the agent is like, well, you gave me the wrong information, or I'm not on the hook for this because look, you signed. So I think that that is one bucket of why we're seeing such stress over making sure that we are accurately underwritten. It has taken me, I'm working on a portfolio now that's about 3 million square feet of shopping centers. We close on it next week. It's taken me 6 months to truly go through all of the underwriting, all the locations, like looking at site plans, breaking out buildings. Is it a partial re-roof or is it a full re-roof? Is it a foam coating? Because that's not a new roof. And that's what I think, if you put a coat on your roof, that's hopefully going to help its life expectancy, but it's not a new roof. So that's where we go into another issue with the faulty underwriting. So there's definitely that. I think that carriers also took on too much within, you know, certain areas for too cheap. When I got into the business, we were looking at property rates of anywhere between 30, 40 cents. I would say Tri-County, you're probably at like an 80, 90 cent. And that's not per square foot. That's for the total insurable value, the rate on the value of the property. So I've been saving my clients, I would say this year, around 20 to 30%. And that's not a sales pitch. That's truly because a lot of our clients, especially in the larger portfolios, you have a layered program. So what happened was when it was this perfect storm, right? And capacity was just a huge issue. And I'm talking about wind capacity. We had to layer. So if we had $20 million or $30 million of replacement costs, we had one that would take five, another one that would take five, another one that would take two, and we had to layer it up. So the reason why I think we're seeing it come down is with better underwriting, carriers are getting more comfortable with, instead of taking five, they're taking 10. So we're cutting out some of those layers, which is driving the rate down. So I would say if you want to take advantage of the market stabilizing, I'm not going to say it's softening, I'm going to say stabilizing, is accurate underwriting. I just had another portfolio that was about 2 million square feet in about four states. And I would say 50% of the portfolio was sprinklered and it wasn't reflective on the schedule of values. So a lot of the time with our shopping centers, we don't have like appraisals. Most of the time, I think with multifamily, especially depending upon the lender, we would, you know, have an appraisal. But it depends too, if it's an all cash deal or there's, you know, seller financing, I would just get an appraisal. It's a couple thousand dollars. Just get it. Just have it. And then I think another contributor to the rates is also being realistic with inflation. You can't rebuild in Florida for under $100 a square foot. So I think that not only have rates gone up, but when rates go up and then your property insurable replacement goes up, then you're seeing these massive double digit increases.
If you're listening to this now, you know what we always recommend, Jamie.
Yes.
To our clients, right?
So I have a question about condos.
Before we get to condos, I wanted to ask you, just because I was looking through my notes. So a couple of years ago, we did sort of like a summary of where we were seeing the problems in the commercial insurance market that were separate from the residential insurance market. And we were doing this for, are there things that we could advocate at the state level, you know, change law that would improve the commercial insurance market? At that time, you know, I was looking through my notes. We had gone, I think, from five major Florida admitted carriers down to three on the commercial side. And we were losing, I think Great American was no longer in Florida. Everest was leaving Florida. Arch Specialty Insurance Company, Kronos, and I think Lloyd's of London was only doing certain underwriters. Have you seen some of those providers come back into Florida? Is there much more competitive?
Yeah, they never left. Never left.
Interesting.
No. So Kronos is Amerisk, right? Kronos is the direct facility. I'm very close with Kronos. I would say, you know, 90% of my business was with Kronos for many years. And then obviously, I think that they did a great job during the, you know, insurance crisis, where, like, when I tell you, they every week were tightening and tightening and tightening their guidelines and really honest about it, you know. And so I think, you know, I work very closely with them, with their CEO. I've been taking my clients, you know, on trips to Atlanta to meet with carriers. I think it's important. And not just carriers, and you know, there's wholesalers, right? So there's a middleman that we have to access to get to some of those other agents. But Arch, which is Allianz Fireman's Fund, Arch just bought Allianz. They are on most of my casualty. They are not, you know, gonna be the biggest player for wind. So I think that there's two sides you need to think about it. The admitted carriers never really wanted to write wind anyways in the state of Florida. So that wasn't historically, if you saw like Travelers on a wind policy, I would always say like, stay, don't move. I don't even want to take it over. Just fly under the radar, you know? So look, they still have some legacy clients that they're going to keep. The accounts perform well, but they're not like writing new business for property and wind. I think the biggest issue that we have right now, and I have about 60, just so you know, I've got 60 million square feet in about 14 states. So, I mean, I'm in the middle of a $60 million construction project on the side of a mountain in Telluride. I've got a couple million square feet in California, Virginia, Maryland. So, I mean, the biggest issue that I see is really the casualty, which is the general liability portion. And that is where you're starting to see Liberty Mutual used to love the shopping center space. Travelers used to love the shopping center space. They don't anymore. So things as so simple as, you know, in our shopping centers, daycares, karate schools, tutoring, anywhere, any tenant that has children that are being left there, are they carrying abuse and molestation coverage? If they're not, then why aren't we asking them to? It should be in our leases. Because what's happening is all of a sudden there's a claim, a child is involved in that claim. And if that daycare or school doesn't have that coverage, that's going to fall on the landlord. And so that's why you have these admitted markets that are like fleeing the state. They're like, no thanks, because their forms include a lot of that coverage. So we're having to go into the excess surplus lines market, which is not a scary market to be in. The only difference is admitted markets versus non-admitted. Admitted markets are just most of the time, one size fits all. They have a box. Either you're in it or you're out of it. They file their rates with the state and they're backed by the state fund. The excess surplus lines market is not. So there's a lot more flexibility when it comes to underwriting. But they're all, I mean, I only write with A-rated carriers. So I would always say, instead of having this like fixation on admitted versus non-admitted, yes, would we prefer to be in the admitted market? Yes. But look at the financial rating. Make sure that they're, you know, if they're a B-rated carrier, like State Farm was downgraded to a B-rated carrier. And people in California, like my clients, they're like, you have me in the excess surplus lines market. I'm like, you want to stay with State Farm? They were just downgraded to a B-rated carrier. So again, you could Google admitted versus non-admitted carriers. You could put it into ChatGPT. ChatGPT does a wonderful job of explaining. So I think that the casualty is really a big piece to it with those high risk cannabis, vape stores, any user or restaurant user that is going to be open past 11 o'clock serving alcohol. We're just going to want to make sure that they're a little bit tied up, and simple things like, how are we handling security? How do you handle security?
And you know, you reminded me of something that it was a bill that was introduced in both the House and the Senate in the state of Florida last year. It didn't pass. Hopefully there'll be more conversation about it. And it was called the premises bill. Have you heard about this, right? And it's where a lot of people don't understand. If somebody comes into your store to commit a crime, but they get injured, right? The landlord, the property owner, is still on the hook for that injury, which is crazy, right? And the premises bill, what it intends to say is you have to take into account the intentional criminal act. I think they call it intentional tort in determining who's at fault, right? And it's crazy. When we talk to people about this, they you know, of course, it defies logic.
So, and other bills that have been introduced that have been fought back because of the cost to the property owner, now that I'm thinking about it from the insurance side, might actually make sense, and again, be an educational thing, such as lighting. There was one that was, they were going to do mandatory lighting on all buildings over a certain square footage. They were going to do, I think at one point in Miami-Dade County, they were actually going to require cameras on certain properties. And those got fought back because it's like, wait, private property rights and everything else. But maybe if you could tell an owner, okay, maybe that bill didn't pass, but you should still do it because your premiums are going to go down by.
Sure. Well, so here's in the mindset, and I'm glad that this just, my ADHD allowed me to go to this. What is a claim? And I think that there is this crazy idea that if someone falls on our property or hurts themselves, that's a claim. Well, what are they claiming? Are they like, if they just, it was an incident. So we should be doing our job to make sure that we're recording that incident, but you don't need to tell the carrier every time someone falls on your property. You don't have a duty to report if someone hurt them. Listen, if there's an ambulance, if there was a shooting, if there was something of that nature, of course you want to give them a heads up, but in your email, you should be saying for notice only. But what we are starting to see, and when I look at these accounts and I see a list of claims that are zero payout, zero payout, zero payout, zero payout. My clients are like, I don't have any claims. I'm like, you do. Even if they weren't paid out, you are showing the carrier frequency. Frequency will eventually be severity. It's just science, math. Like a perfect example. There was a woman at a shopping center. She was carrying, and by the way, I do this all the time, so I'm so guilty of it. She was carrying like 6 bags on one hand and like 10 on the other. And is like, you know, doing one of these. I do it all the time. I don't want to take the cart. And then I feel bad. Like I want to bring the cart back. And you know. so she fell. Whose fault is that though? You lost your balance. You're wearing wedges, you know, I mean, and the payout was over $200,000. And when you look up the history of that person, she's a repeat offender. So the question then becomes, okay, she hurt herself. We're going to file our incident report. We even have video of this woman, like literally juggling bags. So the question then, and then we do research to find out that they're a repeat offender. Why don't we do all of that due diligence before filing a claim? Because what I would tell my client next time, because obviously that claim was not on my watch, is, hey, call your attorney, have them look into this person. And let's like put some strategy behind it. And does that mean that we wait to see if you know, pulled in to a lawsuit? Maybe. But does that mean that we have to pull our carrier into the lawsuit? Because you're going to pay for it either way. So why don't you have your attorney respond to that attorney and build a case? Say, hey, this is a repeat offender. We have cameras. We just have evidence of paving art. We have no potholes. Most of the time they will go away. Mm-hmm. And if that means you have to do and then you have a release. And if there's a payout of, I don't know, a couple thousand dollars to make it go away for their medical bills, so be it. But you filing the claim, the carrier then spending thousands upon thousands of dollars in investigating, hiring counsel, an adjuster. Now that claim, which could have been settled for $5,000 privately through your own counsel, we're forking it over to the carrier.
Well, and you said even if they deny, it could be a minimum of like $30,000. So what I'm hearing is a fallacy, and something that I hear all the time is like people say, oh, well, I just settled. It's the cost of doing business. I'm like, if we all keep settling, these frivolous lawsuits are going to keep coming and our insurance is going to keep going up. Right. So I love that you pointed that out. The fact that they can get an attorney involved without involving their insurance company right away.
And give us notice only. Just say, hey, notice only. I'm going to try to handle this with my own attorney, because when we underwrite for your renewal, right, if you have an open claim, there's going to be a reserve on there. So a lot of the time I'll look at the loss runs and I'll see an open claim and I'll look at the reserves of like $100,000 or $200,000. And I'm like, hey, can we lower this reserve? Because that's, you know what that's going to do? That's going to allow the carrier or other carriers looking at the account be a little bit nervous and or charging you more money. Because if and by the way, the carrier should, you know, at the end of the day, if they're going to be on the hook, they're not in the business to lose money. So I think it's really important to not look, if you want to continue to think of the carriers as bad guys, then you're not going to win. I think that what we need to start doing is look at this as like a partnership and how best to handle these situations, and making sure that like your agent is like the therapist, you know, bringing both sides together and trying to, I want my carriers to be happy, because when my carriers are happy, they're able to be human and bring a human element to underwriting, which I think is like, we talk about it all the time in commercial real estate, you know, is like sometimes, and even in banking, getting on the phone, being able to talk through a deal is going to be so much better than, you know, just being so transactional. Unfortunately, the way insurance is structured, you don't really have that direct access. Sometimes I have to access a middle person to get there. So I think that it's something that I think hopefully we can improve upon somehow, because the carriers, I mean, most of the underwriters, like they really do care, you know, and they're working really hard.
And that brings up a great point, because I think that insurance companies have been vilified to the point of the roof. And I'm not saying there aren't bad players out there, like in any industry. But I'm a little bit curious, because incoming Senate President Ben Albritron from Wachula, I don't know if you read that, he warned insurance companies about paying claims on time. And he's made the comment that the state of Florida has kowtowed and pretty much written our laws favoring insurance companies and not the public. But yet we're finding out that the number one person who hasn't been paying claims is actually the state of Florida with Citizens. And I'm just curious, in terms of your getting out there and educating people, which, I mean, I can't tell you how much, I think I've learned more from you than I have from any other interview, mainly because I'm like, yeah, it's an insurance policy. I need it. If I don't sign it, I don't have it. But your underwriting, the Schedule A, all that kind of stuff definitely leads me to believe that if we as insureds and the insurance industry as insurers and legislatures as law writers did a better job coming together and getting a clear message out, to your point, not the fake news, then I think that there would be a good balance. Like just what Fernando said, we've been basing laws on the fact that five carriers that you say never left the market, right? So I'm just curious, what do you see from, and going back to Fernando's earlier question, from an advocacy standpoint, and is there something that can be done that just, first of all, have you ever been invited to Tallahassee to speak to lawmakers?
No, I would love to, but I...
Okay. That's, there we go. She's got to be a speaker for...
So, and Beth, who is just I love her so much. She's like, you need to get active on Twitter and you need to, you know, spread these messages. It's so hard because my clients are number one, you know? And I, for the most part, as much as like, I wish, like I have two girls, my 14-year-old is like this unbelievable volleyball player, Ransom, varsity in eighth grade. I just want you to know, high school varsity, go Raiders. And then I have a 4-year-old, you know, so it's like between my kids and the dog, and I'm now getting another dog.
Because hard. Why not? It's already chaotic.
It's already chaotic. But it's hard because, you know, it's so to write these portfolios. When I think of like the 60 million square feet that's currently in our program, it's so taxing. And like, thankfully, since I moved to Iowa, I now have a business partner, Mike Mellum. And Mike and I have kind of joined forces because he's always been on the construction side, you know? And so when I met him at Iowa, and Iowa is like the best company in the world because it truly is like, I thought it was a cult. I thought it was a happiness cult. I'm like, there's no way that everyone is this happy and collaborative. This is like the most competitive industry. Everyone calls each other partners. It's so nice. But Mike and I met and I started picking his brain about circling back to like the GCs and the vendors. And I'm like, what type of exclusions are you seeing in your policies that you're writing for your large manufacturers and contractors so I can be more aware of it? And then we were like, you know what, forget it. Let's just join our practices. So between us trying to manage our clients and how busy they are with acquiring and so forth, and then who's coming onto their properties and the construction and contractors, we just signed on with a AI company that's going to be handling compliance for our clients. They do all the tenant COIs, the vendor COIs. Within 60 seconds, it reviews the contract and the compliance of the COI. It's amazing. It's called ARC Technologies. So we're trying to like get some of that adopted so that way we can have enough time to advocate and to spread these messages. It's really difficult though, because most people are in the mindset of I'm married to my agent, which I can totally appreciate and understand. Or you have other clients who are like, I bid it out every year. There's no such thing as bidding unless you're doing a market assignment. So I think that what owners need to understand is if I take your portfolio or your property with your named insured ABC Realty, it blocks the market, all market. Now, if someone else is getting you a quote, it's because they're using XYZ Realty with your same information. However, there's a reason why they only want one agent to go in. And it's because an underwriter does not want to underwrite twice. If I get a quote from an underwriter, they can't flip that quote to someone else, you know, without a broker of record letter. So it's also just being smarter, understanding what does the carrier want to see? What do I want to see? And how do we, you know, meet that in the middle?
I love that. I want to thank you so much for your time. And I have to tell you how much I appreciate your total focus on the client and understanding that where you're bringing value is in you personally being involved in the underwriting and the policy and the market search, et cetera, et cetera. And even though it might be better for your business to be out there because it's who knows you and having been seen, I love the fact that you are laser focused on the customer. So we're gonna go out and be your mouthpiece for you. We do want to try to get you invited to a Florida Realtors or National Association of Realtors.
I even have charts so you can see how nerdy we are.
Yeah, we're nerdy. We're data dorks. But I want to thank you really quickly. We always do a fun fact at the end. So my fun fact is from the Florida Office of Insurance. There's 4,833 insurance-related entities in Florida. 3.5% of Florida's GDP was generated by the insurance industry in 2020. And there's 132 wow. insurance wow. industry jobs in the state.
Yeah, I love it.
So it's big business.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it so much for having me on. And obviously, I could talk all day about this, so we'll have to meet up.
Yeah, well, definitely.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. I think if you listen to this episode, you have gotten so much out of it. You know, we really enjoyed having this time with Jamie. And definitely for all and any of your commercial insurance needs, your questions, she is the person for the job. So thank you again for pulling up a chair and joining us. And until next time, say bye, Jennifer.
Bye, but please share this episode with everybody in the state who needs commercial insurance, because I guarantee you're going to be bringing them value. Thank you, Jamie.
There you go. Jennifer with the call to action. I love it. Bye, everybody.